Welcome back to the Merv Griffin Radio Show, and here's Merv.
My next guest is a prolific author and an expert on the subject of international terrorism, which occupies lots of space on the front pages every day. It's the basis of his 40th novel called Solo. Would you welcome Jack Higgins? Jack? You've had first-hand knowledge of terrorism with the Royal Horse Guard.
Yeah.
You better explain all of that to the American audience.
Well, the Royal Horse Guard's the Queen's bodyguard. Uh-huh. But, you know, you can see them in London in breastplates and horses with those helmets with the big plumes, scarlet plumes. But, of course, they're a very elite regiment who have a very active role, particularly in Ireland, like most other units in the British Army these days. You have to do your service in Ireland, and they usually go and do 3 months or 4 months at a time over there.
It's just not a prestigious appointment, serving the Queen of England.
No, not anymore.
You know how to take care of yourself and Her Majesty.
Yeah, very, very much so, because of the whole in guarding the Queen alone these days isn't what it used to be.
I wouldn't think there would be much or many threats against her.
I think the main problem is not the... if you take, for example, the question of the IRA, the provisional IRA Army Council, I'm sure, would never dream of attacking the Queen of England or Margaret Thatcher, the Prime Minister, or whatever, because it would be counterproductive.
But they killed one of the closest people in the world to her.
No, they didn't. That was a splinter group. And this is one of the problems, that terrorism has broken down now, so that you have your important groups who really apparently in control, but they've lost control, and then you have very fanatical splinter groups, and you've no control over them, and these are the madmen who, as they say in Ireland, there's a black joke in Ireland, the sort of men who would kill the Pope if they thought it would help the cause.
Some of those famous mercenaries, terrorists and... Non-terrorists, no, mercenaries and terrorists are quite different, aren't they?
Well,
some of those famous mercenaries in the world have been Irish.
Yes, well, this is a historical thing, isn't it? You know, because of the situation with England. I should tell you I'm ambivalent about this, because I'm a British citizen, I'm also an Irish citizen. Mm-hmm. It's one of those strange things you're allowed to be these days, and I've got joint citizenship. And also, I was raised in Northern Ireland as a boy, and to make it even more complicated, although I'm a Protestant, I came from a Catholic Protestant extended family, so I never knew which side to choose. Mm. Well, the great joke in Ireland used to be, when you were a boy on your way to school, you get stopped, and they'd say to you, what are you, a Pape or a prod? Which meant, are you a Catholic, are you a Protestant? And, you know, the Irish are fond of black jokes. I mean, you've got to be funny when this situation's really serious. And the joke used to be, the best thing to do is to say, I'm Jewish.
Ah,
yeah. And about these black jokes, you know, that people can laugh in the worst situations. I mean,
by black joke, you mean?
In England and Ireland, a black joke means a joke that shouldn't really be funny, because you're talking about something that's really very nasty, but people make a joke about it. Like, they'll say...
Out of nervousness.
Out of nervousness. They'll say things like, for instance, the Jewish joke, you know, there's a story very popular in Belfast that there's a man on the late night bus, and when it stops at the stoplight, a gunman jumps on and sticks the gun between his eyes and says, what are you, a Pape or a prod? And the guy says, I'm Jewish, I'm Jewish. And the gunman says, Begorra, I'm the luckiest Arab in Belfast tonight.
Oh, whoa. Come out of that living in constant fear.
It's the tension, yes. And in the sense that people have gone through such despair for 10, 11 years now, that and when you see it, you know, it's like the Blitz in London in 1940. You see rows and rows of streets which are just rubble.
America is new in the world, Jack, to... terrorism.
Yeah,
we're not as old in the world as the British. Have our anti-terrorist units a lot to learn from the British anti-terrorists? We saw how you handled the Iranian takeover.
Yes, this is understandable, though, because if you go back as far as the Korean War, when the British and American last fought together, that was a conventional war. Since then, America was engaged in a very large major war, Vietnam, but the British have been engaged in little terrorist wars, places like Aden, Cyprus, Malaya, Borneo, and then Ireland, so that their expertise has had to be in urban guerrilla warfare, where the enemy are hidden amongst the civilians. They'd address as civilians. You can't tell who the enemy are. Now, that becomes a very nasty kind of war to come to terms with, and I think it is something that the British have become expert at because they've had to be.
Right. Where are most of the terrorists in the world operating out of now?
Oh, well, that's a very, very difficult situation. I think most people would probably say Libya and Colonel Gaddafi, who offers a base to almost anybody, because the IRA have been known to go to Libya as well, you know. And Libya, Cuba, of course, where almost any world terrorist who gets into trouble, for example, on an aeroplane can always say, "Well, take me to Cuba," and he knows he's got a base there. Probably Cuba and Libya, yes.
Well, what is the goal of the terrorist in the world?
Well, I increasingly despair of finding out, because most terrorists are people, if you take democratic societies, the people who have very obsessive, fanatical attitudes about something. The majority of people in the country won't vote for them. For instance, we've got a very bad situation in Britain at the moment concerning Wales, where you get a minority group in Wales who don't think that the Welsh language is used enough on television. And they've actually been burning down houses. A couple of bombs were left. One bomb was left outside a Member of Parliament's house, and this kind of thing. In other words, it's getting rather nasty about a minority matter concerning language. The majority of people in Wales, there have been many referendums, many polls on this, aren't bothered about this question at all. And yet a minority group start using very vicious methods. What's happening nowadays, you get the same thing in Ireland, you've just had this terrible business in Italy, where terrorists, and in Italy they were fascists, to further their ends, they will take a bomb and leave it in a place like this, where you've several hundred ordinary people who aren't interested in the political question. That bomb goes off, and you've maybe got 110 casualties, dead, crippled people.
What were they gained by that?
Well, in the end, you might say it should be counterproductive that people be sickened by it. And yet, if you take the Irish situation, we've had 11 years of bombs, deaths. Do you know, we worked out statistically that if you took the population of Ulster and added up all the soldiers dead, all the civilians dead, all the people wounded and crippled, for the pro rata for the American population, you would have had in the 10 years over a quarter of a million casualties. That's the scale of it. And yet, the IRA is still strong and active, and the Protestant terrorist groups are still strong and active.
We'll come right back after this message.
And now, once again, here's Merv with Jack Higgins.
Are there terrorists at this moment in America?
Whether you have your terrorists or not, yes. I mean, in the past...
No, I mean, are there alien terrorists here? Right?
Oh, yes. Certainly passing through, certainly meeting people, perhaps for financial reasons and this kind of thing. If that's specifically geared towards, for example, are there Irish terrorists, I think I come from a very beautiful island in the English Channel Islands, you know, close to France, which is still part of England, called Jersey. And there have been instances there where it's been a known fact that IRA men have been enjoying a rest, if you like, a rest. But that isn't to say that they've been doing anything very active. And I think probably the same thing pertains in America. There's been a lot of talk about the extent to which you get Irish Americans supporting the IRA, and indeed Irish Americans supporting the Protestant side in this. And there's this question of, is it right to give funds to buy weapons, which then are going to be used for this awful thing we call these days the soft target hit, which is the great weapon of the terrorist. In other words, what you want to do is to terrorize everybody. So what you do, you take your bomb into a place like this or a cafe or a restaurant, or you start sniping across a square which is full of people like we have here tonight, and ordinary decent people become victims. And in the end, this terror spreads so that often people say, well, give them what they want. And we've seen this, of course.
Breaking down society's resistance. Well, the PLO has been very quiet lately.
Well, I've got a theory about that. I think that Arafat's getting older. And an interesting thing about revolutionary leaders is that they suddenly discover they're not 22 anymore. And they mellow as the years go on. If you think of the people that the British have been involved with over, say, the past 30 years, so it's more a British problem than an American one, you think of people like Nehru in India, who was put into prison by the British, but eventually became this country's leader. You think of people like Jomo Kenyatta in Kenya. You remember the Mau Mau rebellion? And yet, Kenyatta was sent to jail. He ended up as president of the country. And, of course, the supreme example would be Archbishop Macarius, who was sent into exile into the Seychelles, the remotest island they could find. But in the end, he had to be brought back and put in charge. But you find that they all mellow, and I think this is happening with the Arabs. And I have an idea now that they really are beginning to feel, because the Palestinians do have a cause, there's no doubt about that, and I think that they're beginning to feel now that they're going to get somewhere, perhaps by using the big battalions, politics, the big countries pressuring now. Of course, there's talk, now that there's this business about Jerusalem becoming definitely the capital, you're now getting talk of a genuine holy war. And that could be very dangerous, because that starts bringing you in the main Arab countries again, and one could be faced with another really cataclysmic situation.
Solo, is there some basis to fact?
Oh, yes, I got the idea. Yes.
Character Solo.
It's very interesting how I got the idea for this book, because there was a famous shooting in London outside the Hilton Hotel in which an Arab gunman shot another Arab. And I happened to be in a restaurant nearby and was just coming out with somebody. We heard the shots, and I immediately knew they were shots. They weren't a car backfiring. And by the time we got up to the Hilton, of course, the police had arrived. The place was cordoned off. And it was an interesting case, because when the gunman ran away, one of the Hilton doormen chased him, and a taximan chased him. And the gunman turned and fired at them several times, but in the end they overpowered him. In fact, that doorman was decorated by the Queen with the Queen's Gallantry Medal only a couple of months ago. I think he richly deserved it. But that gave me the idea for the book, because I thought, when somebody's doing this, firing indiscriminately in a London street or a Los Angeles street, wherever it would be, I thought, what about the ordinary people who get in the way? How would you feel if you get home and your wife hasn't come back from shopping, or your daughter hasn't come back from school, and then the police arrive and say, look, we've bad news. There was a terrorist being chased up the street, and your wife hadn't gotten away with the bullet. And that was what started me off on the story, exploring such a situation, you see.
You've written some very famous books, Jack, but you always seem to write under a lot of different names. Are you wanted?
Wanted in 11 European countries, yes. No, it's
a lot of non-blooms.
Well, not so much now. I did have in the early days, and that was for the
four or five.
It was the simplest of all reasons, that most publishers would only publish you under one name. So if you, and they'll only publish one book a year. So if you're prolific, you have to go to a different publisher and use another name. That it was a simpler reason as that, really.
What are some of your other
Harry Patterson, of course. I did a book last year, To Catch a King, about Hitler's plot to kidnap the Duke of Windsor, which is being filmed soon.
Right.
And it's a true, very true story, the truest story I ever wrote. But, of course, the one I can never get away from is The Eagle Has Landed.
The Eagle Has Landed.
And I'll tell you a very funny story about that. In Norfolk, in England, this very remote part of England where the story took place, I naturally invented the village of Studley Constable, and it's become one of the greatest tourist attractions in Norfolk, because the book is so famous that tourists from all over the world, they drive up on the coast road, stop at gas stations and say, how do I get to Studley Constable? You know, the myth has become greater than reality, yes. I've even had letters. This is absolutely true. No, letters to me, reaching me through the publishers, telling me, like one lady who wrote to me and said her uncle was one of the American Rangers in the battle. I heard from a German lady who said that her father was one of the paratroopers. I've had all sorts of letters like that, you know, which are really quite extraordinary.
It's terrific.
Yeah.
Jack Higgins, and we'll be back after this message.
You know what's best for your car.
Polyglycote.
Well, there's a shell game going on right now.
Polyrasmatize.
There are newcomers in the paint sealant and rust-proofing industry seeking to imitate polyglycote. Don't be confused or fooled by similar names.